Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or Star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Bray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soundbites. It is Saturday. It is the 27th of April, Anno Domini 2002. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I am Steve Ray.
And we have Rob Linton on the buttons, and we'll be taking your calls at the numbers you just heard. But before we do that, we will talk about the news, and we'll start with Dave.
Really a slow news week.
It was.
Not a heck of a lot happening, which I guess... in a good way, you know. Of course, Intel announced their Pentium 5s coming out. Everybody's, oh, maybe I should go get those. And it's like, the first chips out are always the high end for the server. And like just right now, just alone on the Pentium 4s, there's not much software that's going to take advantage of it. Hello, it takes programmers a while to first see the chip so they can write the code to it. But on that same note, AMD is now forming an alliance with Microsoft. Their chip code named Hammer. And I like it. They got different versions of it.
Is it Jim the Hammer?
No, they got one. Oh. One of the chips is called referred to as Claw Hammer.
There you go. What about Ball Peen?
There you go. But
and Bag O' Hammers.
What it is they're trying to work with Microsoft, and they said this has been going on quite a bit, even though AMD has had sort of a tiff or lawsuit there with Microsoft saying, you know, the monopoly and everything else. But they're saying, no, we've been working on this for a while, quite a few years, and it's all based on the 64-bit. So it looks like those two might kiss up and... to each other and sort of bite the bullet and develop this chip on the AMD, which is always a little bit cheaper than the Intel, and quite honestly, with today's technology, just as good.
Yep.
So you really don't see much difference between the Intel and the AMD chip. So stay tuned, folks. It should be interesting to see what develops out of this.
It certainly should. And Steve, what's going on in the Mac world?
Well, actually, a similar story. IBM and Motorola were the principal partners in the AIM Alliance, as it was called, to develop the PowerPC processor with Apple. Basically what has happened is that the IBM Power architecture they use has become the most prevalent chip in embedded processors. Your car has three or four PowerPC chips in them. Several of the
maybe your car.
Several of the video games on the market are using PowerPC chips. So it's become a very common chip in the embedded market. Apple is the principal computer vendor. But it sort of pales in comparison with how many PowerPCs are sold into other markets.
IBM has a whole line of PowerPC.
Yeah. Right, yeah, IBM was one of the principal developers. IBM and Motorola are both manufacturing PowerPC chips under their own manufacturing processes. And there's been some interesting diverging in the last couple of years that IBM and Motorola are sort of backing away from each other. And IBM has recently announced the multi-year agreement with Toshiba and Sony to develop new semiconductors for them. And Motorola is pushing forward with the G5 processor that we might see by the end of this year in new Macs. That's just a vague rumor because they are working on a G5. It usually comes after the G4.
Amazing how that works out.
Right,
like
yeah,
that.
Just like the Pentium 5. Just,
you're right.
I'm starting to get rumors.
Maybe the 6 is going to come after that?
That could be, yeah.
Wow.
I'm on a roll.
But they might have to, they can come up with a different word for that because they originally came out with Pentium, meaning the 586, because they couldn't trademark a number. So it's interesting that G3 and G4 were actually code names for the third generation and fourth generation PowerPC chip. The actual chip numbers, 7450, 7550, that IBM and Motorola use sort of don't come into the nomenclature. But it's interesting to see how much the processors have changed. There were a lot of rumors that IBM had G3 processors running at incredibly fast speeds in the gigahertz range before Motorola got the G4 processors up that fast. So there was a lot of marketing issues with Apple. They didn't want to release a low-end perceived G3 running at a faster clock speed than their high-end performance G4s. So that they've been some interesting backfighting back and forth. And now Apple is moving away from the G3 a little bit themselves. It's currently only only used in the iBook low-cost laptop. All of the other products, including the iMac, which is their low-cost home-based machine, are using G4 processors. So what we're expecting to see is that probably by the end of the year, that Apple's going to start shifting into the G5 on their performance Power Mac models and keep the G4 in their low-cost models. So it's the same thing that happens on the PC world.
Right. The new machines come in at the high end and push everybody else down.
Later, greater.
In Windows news, well, first, of course, don't forget the virus problems. Update your antivirus software.
Actually, from the computer show, we had several people ask us what that meant and how you do it. So we should explain to people that in your antivirus program, typically there's an update button. McAfee calls it update. Symantec calls it live update. That goes out on the internet and downloads the latest definitions. You can also go to the web page of your manufacturer, Symantec or McAfee, and download them manually.
Right.
But you need to make sure you do that to make sure that the update does run.
Right. In other news, the trial with Microsoft, they're in the penalty phase now, I guess, is what you call that. As you may remember, about 100 years ago, Microsoft was declared an illegal monopoly by the government. Now they're deciding how to punish them. So they were in court this week. Microsoft had its own witnesses on the stand. It was an ugly week for Microsoft on the stand. Their vice president, Chris Jones, testified that people would be confused if a new version of Windows came out. And
yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to the four they're already selling?
Exactly. So he was, went away. Jerry Sanders was the outgoing chief executive of Advanced Micro Devices. Microsoft now has this new initiative with them. He testified under oath about the cataclysmic damage the remedies would cause to the industry. The problem is he had to admit on this under oath that he hadn't even read what the states were proposing for that remedy.
What a shock.
But he was nice enough to say that he thought it would be cataclysmically damaging, although he had not read it. Autodesk was unhappy that Microsoft's decision included putting Java into Windows. Sun Microsystems is, of course, unhappy with Microsoft for that. Kevin Murphy is an economics professor who discussed the alleged doomsday effect of the state's proposed remedies, but it was revealed that he had very little antitrust experience and zero experience with software issues. Bill Gates took the stand for 3 days. He held it together pretty well, actually, considering that in the earlier trial, it was horrifyingly embarrassing for him. He was a laughingstock. He held it together pretty darned well, but he did a taped deposition that he wasn't really good at. He said that the proposed punishment would make them withdraw Windows. He said the state's remedy was impossible. But he was forced at the end to admit that, in fact, it would be easy to do because they now have something called XP Embedded, which is bits and pieces of Windows that you put together for what you need, and you could certainly put together an entire Windows system without the browser if you really wanted to. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we will be taking your calls right here on Soundbites, the intergalactic longest-running radio computer call-in show in history, right here on 1180 WHAM. Where? Oh, right here, yes. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enrich.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Rob Linton is on the buttons, and we are Soundbites, and we are taking your calls, and we are talking to Mike from Henrietta. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Gentlemen, I have a 1.5 gig hard drive Pentium 1, which I'm always struggling to save my bytes on. And I've got a whole bunch of DBX files that are associated, I guess, with my mail program, Outlook Express.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to go into them and delete some files, but when I go back to File Find to see where all my bytes are being eaten up, it doesn't seem to show that I have been deleting bytes from the different DBX files.
Outlook doesn't delete them. It just removes them from, it removes the files from its directory mapping.
Right.
You have to go into the options, preferences. It's hidden like five or six dialogues down, because I just had to find it this week, and compact to the database.
Yeah, compress them.
There's either compact or compress.
Oh, I do compact my files also a lot. After I delete, I should compact. Is that
yes.
Right. Inside Outlook.
Yes, I've done it before. Files. Compact all folders, I think.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, you have to have a lot of space on your drive to do that, otherwise it may fail, because what it really does is copy the data to another file. So you have to have a lot of room on the disk, at least equal to the size of your biggest file.
Yeah, we had a client with a 500 megabyte email file, and Outlook was crashing all the time.
Well, duh.
So, well, we compacted it to 250 megabytes.
Excellent.
And she's still got to delete more of her mail.
Right.
I'll just keep compacting. Now, should it be much of a task, though, to add more hard drive to this Pentium 1?
No, not at all. You could probably that one will handle a 10 gig, no problem.
All right, that should be my
if you can find one that's small.
I also have a swap.
I believe it or not, I've still got some 10 giggers.
I have a swap file that also wildly fluctuates.
Now, that's part of Windows.
That's common for that to happen?
Yeah. Windows will eat up as much space as it can. And again, if you were to go, I'd go with a bigger hard drive. They're relatively cheap now, and an extra 10 gig doesn't sound like it would hurt you.
Terrific. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Our next caller is Jim from Irondequoit. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Yeah, my computer gets a little sluggish, and I've been told that it's because I don't have enough memory.
How much memory do you have?
64 megabyte.
And what version of Windows are you running?
98.
64 is bare minimum.
For the operating system, forget about any programs.
I would recommend 128.
All right, now my next question is, let's say I go buy this stuff, is it easy to put in myself, or should I have them do it?
A lot of places will install it for free. I know a couple of superstores are offering, free memory upgrades. In other words, you buy the memory and they'll install it quickly for you.
The big trick is that there's four or five different specifications for memory, and you have to know the right one for your computer, or they'll have to look it up.
Right. And the key thing is, if you decide to put it in yourself, key thing is to leave it plugged in, turned off. This way, when you go to open up the case, you touch, say, the power supply, you're grounding yourself, and then you can go ahead and snap the memory in relatively easy.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay. Okey-doke.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Our next caller is Victor from Rochester. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
I have two questions. First, I've got the Internet Explorer version 6, and I'm running Windows 98. Now, when you go to Tools, Internet Options, there's a thing that says Delete Cookies. Now, is that should that be done every now and then, or should it not be done at all?
It depends. If you go to sites that require cookies, you shouldn't delete them very often at all. What a cookie does is it lets the website remember who you are. So, for example, your banking site, a cookie is a good thing. On a site like Ask Nick, a cookie is a good thing. On other sites, a cookie lets them track what you do and where you go, so a cookie would be a bad thing. So it depends. If you go to a site like your banking regularly, you'll just have to, the next time you go, it'll want to put a new cookie on your drive. And you'll have to re-enter your username, your PIN, whatever those things are that your bank asks for.
A lot of times you can look through your cookie list and things that are going to, like, DoubleClick, which is a big advertiser. You can delete those because they're tracking what ads you've clicked on or what ads you've seen. So you know you can delete those. If the cookie says it's from, Chase Bank, then that one you want to leave.
It's right. A double-edged sword.
All right, now, is there any advantage or disadvantage for me to upgrade to Windows, Millennium, or XP?
XP is, how much memory do you have?
640.
No, I don't think so.
640 megs of RAM?
Yeah.
Okay. 98 okay. Can't take advantage of that, but you may have stuck it in there.
640
yeah.
Megs?
Or 64
yeah.
Meg?
No, 640. I had two 256 boards, and I think mine came to 128.
And what's your processor speed?
500.
Yeah, you could handle it.
XP would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an advantage to that over what I have now?
It's more stable, and certainly all the newer programs will be written with it in mind.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Goodbye.
Our next caller, Jim? No. Ed. Ed from Webster. I was confused.
Good morning, guys. I got two questions. When I run Microsoft Outlook under Office 2000, Windows 98, the calendar program stops responding. And to get out of it, I do an end task, and I get the message that calendar, Microsoft Outlook, not responding. And I hit the end task again and start over, and it may not appear, for the rest of the session.
Right.
And I've... I've loaded Office, set up Repair, and run that, and installed more memory. I increased it from 64 meg to 198, and I run Norton Antivirus weekly.
Have you installed any of the Office updates?
What's that?
Have you installed any of the Office updates?
The SR1 and the SR2.
SR2, yeah. If you go to officeupdate.microsoft.com, it will see what updates your version of Office needs.
Oh, it's the same place where you get the Windows update?
No, it's a different site just for Office. The Windows updates are separate just for Windows itself.
I haven't run them. Where do you get to the Office update?
Officeupdates.microsoft.com.
Oh, okay.
There's at least a Service Pack 2, and then yep. There's been a lot of security vulnerability patches for Outlook, and I don't remember a calendar patch, but it can't hurt
very
to
well
download
could
it.
Be.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the second question is, in the past 2 days, I've been getting viruses when I run the email, and the first one came in, and it was obvious, and there was a... They quarantined it. They said they couldn't...
repair it.
Couldn't repair it, and... there was a clue in there that it was in the temporary internet, so
right.
I just deleted it.
Right.
Okay, then the next day there were four in there, and the choices weren't as simple, but I deleted them again. One of them was Play Except, but it had no pile.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the problem in... I guess what I have to watch out for is when I delete it that I'm not deleting the system file.
Well, if they're in the temp directory, then it's unlikely that there are any system files in your temp directory.
Well, but I can never find them. See, they're quarantined. When I go to search for them, they're not in there.
Well, if you go into the Norton, if you go to Programs, and off your Programs is the Norton folder. Within the Norton folder, there's one that says Norton Quarantine.
Yeah, it lists them there, but there's no PS. And when I then I'll try to find that file using Microsoft Explorer, and I thought because they're quarantined that it can't find them or can't locate them. So it's just a guess that they're in temp.
Yeah.
The one had a payout to it. That's the reason I knew where to do it.
Mm-hmm.
When it quarantines them, it does put them into a database, I think, rather than just as a separate file.
What you need to do is to go into your Norton and set it up to use a path so you know where it's going. Make a special separate folder for them so they will always go there. Set up the path to do that, and then you'll always know where they are and you'll always be able to delete them.
Yeah, create a folder called Quarantine. Or point it towards there.
You can also change your preferences, so instead of automatically quarantining them, it automatically deletes them, or it asks you before it does anything.
Yeah, right. Prompt before you...
Okay, we have to take a break, Ed.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you so much. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites, the longest-running radio show in the universe. Well, computer call... Well, anyway, we're on 1180 WHAM, and we'll be right back. Hi there, I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enrich.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Reticent Rob Linton on the bus. He's been waiting for me to say that.
I need a new word for this week.
Reluctant Rob Linton on the buttons. And we have Jim on a cell phone. Jim, you're pulled off on the side of the road, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your question?
Hey, a couple weeks ago I caught the end of it. You were talking about how Yahoo, through marketing or something, they send you like 50 to 75 emails a day. How do I get rid of that?
What you need to do is to log on to your... You go to Yahoo and log in.
Right.
Because you've got a username and password for your instant messenger or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there you have preferences that you can set. And what you do is you set them all to no. There's two levels of them, though. One is just a link to more levels. So you want to make sure you, you don't have to uncheck them all, certainly. You may be interested in some of them, but you do have to...
Take your time.
Get them, you just have to make sure you get them all.
And how do I get to that preferences?
If you go to yahoo.com, which of course you can't do right now, because at least I hope you can't.
Yeah, cellular modem in the car?
Sure,
no,
you can.
No.
He's already on the phone.
On yahoo.com, right at the top of the screen... you have the messenger button. If you click that...
Okay.
No, that's not the one.
The personalized button.
Yeah.
Yeah, where'd it go?
Oh, personalized?
Yes.
Yeah, I seem to have gone back, too. I hate the mouse on this machine. Thank you very much. You hit the personalized button. That lets you log in. And then when you log in, you can change your account preferences.
Okay. Great. I just want to get rid of those emails. It's ridiculous.
There you go.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Okay.
Thank you so much. All of you should do that. If you have any sort of Yahoo account at all, be aware that you will get hit with a bunch of spam if you're not very careful. Our next caller, oh, another cell phone, Lori. Lori, you are, of course, also pulled over to the side of the road, right?
Oh, yes. A quick question. We are new owners of a cable modem, and we're starting to tiptoe through
the tulips
and figuring out do we get like a router or a hub for, we have a desktop computer, a PC, a G4 Mac, two laptops, and a printer.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Yeah. Well, the dogs don't have computers yet. So.
Yet. Yet.
Well, then, if you got all that, you want to just go with Linksys makes a hub/router, and they've got them up to 8 ports.
Right. Yeah,
what a hub does is basically just shoot all the data to everybody. What you need
And then
is,
you would need to buy more addresses from Time Warner to have more than one computer online at once.
Exactly. Yeah. That would work. But if you want to do it with just one address from Time Warner or whoever your cable modem provider is, then you do it with a router, which should, by the way, make sure it includes a firewall, because as long as you've got that many machines on, you should do the firewall at the router.
Most of them do.
Most of them do, exactly. If you do a firewall at the router, then you don't have to worry about firewalls on individual machines.
And that's what, like the Linksys is the most popular out there right now. They're the easiest to install because you more or less just plug them in, and it automatically hands out the addresses and has the firewall already preset for you. It's a no-brainer.
Okay. Is there an advantage one way or the other of having, a static IP address or a dynamic IP address for each of those devices?
Well, if you've got them on the inside of your network, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
They'll be mostly static when you set it up, unless you do something very weird. They'll usually get the same address every time.
The big issue is if you want to run a server out to the internet, you're going to serve web pages or serve files, things like that, then it's most convenient to have a static address so people know what that address is.
And frankly, doing that from your own home, unless it's just your own personal server and it's, pictures of your dogs, it doesn't make a lot of sense to do that off of any cable modem or DSL line because you don't get a lot of speed out. They're designed for home use and all the speed is coming in.
Right. Okay.
Okie doke.
All right, that sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Now you can get back on the road and enjoy the rest of your driving experience. Our next caller, Michael from Rochester. Welcome, Michael. What's your question?
Hi. I have a question about uploading files from a digital camera. I have a DC215 Kodak camera, and the computer I have is a Sony Vaio I just bought a couple months ago. It's a 1.3 with 512 of RAM.
Michael, do you have your radio on?
No, I don't.
Oh, interesting. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
No, we're just hearing.
It's just our headphones.
Yeah, maybe. We're hearing a little feedback.
I'm sorry.
No, it's
not your fault.
And
it's Rob's fault.
Why is reticent to get on the? It's not Rob's fault at all. We respect and admire Rob and the work he does here. Go ahead, Michael.
And I have loaded pictures up to the desktop before with this camera, but my wife for my birthday got me a M105 Palm Pilot, and when I loaded the Hot Sync software on there, they both use the serial port, and I don't know if what happened with the Palm Pilot, if it got proprietary or something
like that.
Mm-hmm. I unloaded the Palm Pilot. I went through the troubleshooting for the digital camera because it's not recognizing it.
Yeah.
There's two things you have to unload for the Palm Pilot. One is the desktop software, but the other one is the Hot Sync.
Because basically Hot Sync grabs the serial port waiting for you to Hot Sync.
Right, and it's sitting, it's a little circle, blue and red circle, sitting in the lower right corner somewhere
One other thing, though, you might want to consider getting, since he's got that nice of a system, is there's a product out there called a SanDisk.
Well, that backing up a step, does your computer have USB ports on it?
Yeah, it does.
And a lot of the cameras also have USB ports, so you could connect through USB instead of serial.
Well, then, now
and then where Dave was going is the SanDisk is a memory card reader.
Right.
So instead of plugging the camera to the computer, you just plug the memory card into this box.
Assuming the camera, assuming that particular model has a SanDisk. The other choice is to get a USB cradle for the M105.
Okay.
But I mean, the point is, you can't really share any port that you have something constantly listening in on.
Okay.
And in that, and in the case of the Palm software, it's always listening in.
Okay. So unless you turn it off.
Unless you consistently, you know, dump it and turn it
on.
Yeah.
That's annoying.
So what you want to do is get one of those devices, and it doesn't really matter which, on the USB port. Now, I personally run my, well, I have a Visor, but it's the same software. I run mine off the USB port, and it's great.
Okay.
Although, the USB port would probably be somewhat faster for downloading your pictures. So
but
you
I,
might
I guess,
prefer to do that.
I guess what I have to do is go back and... Now, on my taskbar, Hot Sync isn't showing up like it's currently running, though.
After you uninstalled the Hot Sync, did you try reinstalling the camera software?
Yeah, and it's still giving me a message that says computer cannot detect the scanner or camera. Make sure the device is turned on and properly connected to the computer, which it is. And the thing is that I have an old PC 75 that I can. I take the same camera, I hook it up to the back, same software.
Then it's clearly the serial port, and it's probably still being caught by something. Seriously, your best bet in the long run is to get that camera on USB. Your pictures will go over faster. You'll be much happier.
A lot faster.
Okay.
Okie doke.
All right, thanks.
Thank you so much. We are going to take a break, but we are going to be back in just a couple of minutes with the Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Yes, it's true. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And Rob Linton is on the buttons, and we're going to get back to the phones in just a minute or two. But first, we want to talk about our website. We are at soundbites.org. It's easy to get to us. Go to wham1180.com. Go down to the lower right, left. You'll see our pictures there. Click on that. It'll let you send us comments, not questions, comments. And you'll also see a link to our website at soundbites.org. You can join in the poll. We put a poll up every week. Last week's poll, thank you, Jim LaGraff. Last week's poll is, what's your favorite form of media? We had 197 of you vote, which was down a little bit, but thank you. Number one with 90 votes, reading and listening to the stereo. Number two with 61 votes, streaming audio. That had to be Argyle and Bon Vibra running around every machine they could find.
You got it.
37 votes for streaming video and 9 votes for virtual tours. This week's poll is just the tiniest bit different, assuming this mouse will ever work and let me get there. This week's poll is, again, from one of our listeners who joined into the forums. D Boyd 001, and he says, usually while listening to sound bites, I'm, and the choices are on the computer, watching TV, reading, frantically trying to call sound bites, or sleeping. You can join into that poll at soundbites.org. You can also join into the forums where you can tell us what we got wrong with this poll. I suddenly realized after I'd created the poll, there's no choice for us. There's no doing the show choice.
Well,
but everybody else can
that's
vote.
That's only three answers.
Right, if the count was more than three, something's fishy.
Yeah. but right now we already have 44 votes, and on the computer is winning, which we kind of thought it would. Reading is next, sleeping, watching TV, frantically trying to call sound bites is only 3 votes. That's nonsense. We've already got 4 people online. So please join us at soundbites.org and vote in the poll. And then when you're done, go to the forums. There's a link to the forums where you can join in and give us your opinion on dang near everything in the known universe.
And a few things in the unknown universe.
And that's right. Any post that Steve makes would be that way.
And we should take the time to thank for the folks that stopped out to the Soho show and that we were able to meet and greet. It was quite an experience, a lot of fun, and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was our pleasure. Thank you all. We're going to go back to the phones now, however. And those of you who are not calling in, perhaps you don't know that the numbers are 222-1180 if you're outside the 585, soon to be fully 585 area code. It's 800-295-1180 on the Choice 1 toll-free line. Or if you're a Verizon wireless customer, star 1180. And our next caller, Don from Leroy, New York. Welcome, Don.
Hello.
How are you?
Okay.
What's your question?
I did a Windows update, and after I did it, every time I log on, I get a red window that says Navigation Auto Protect, unable to determine the location of your configuration files.
Where?
Is it NAV Auto Protect?
Yes.
Yeah, Norton Antivirus.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Norton Antivirus Auto Protect is the program that runs in the background, automatically protecting you from viruses. Apparently, it's lost its settings files.
Or the, you know, how Clean Sweep and those will get in there, and it thinks some of your system files have been changed, and it wants to protect it. Now, the updates take effect. You might want to try uninstalling that and reinstalling it.
Okay.
That's probably your best bet. It sounds like that's what happened.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Our next caller, Donna from Farmington. Welcome, Donna. What's your question?
I'm actually calling for my son.
Yeah.
Well, I am.
You got some farmland down there in Farmington?
Yes, I do. he has AOL. My neighbor has AOL, and some of the other neighbors have AOL, and nobody can get on to AOL. They've had the problem for the past 2 or 3 weeks.
You're all probably trying at the same time.
Well,
that one shoestring, you know.
Well, they can't, not because it's busy. AOL says there's something wrong with their computer. The AOL says there's something wrong with my son's modem.
How does it fail? When you start to dial AOL, the little box comes up. It looks for the modem.
Right.
Then it dials, so you may hear the dial tone.
But then they can't get on.
Do you hear the other end ring? Do you hear the other end answer? Do you hear
No, they're not hearing an answer.
So it's not your fault.
So it dials and dials and dials and nothing ever picks up?
They've had the phone company come out, and the phone company can't figure it out. And it's a neighbor on my street, and then he lives a couple of streets away. My son, he can't get on. Somebody else on his street can't get on.
If it rings and never answers, it's not you, it's AOL.
First, however, check to see that your phone numbers are correct.
Well, that's what I was just going to ask you.
You can also change the order that those phone numbers dial in the AOL setup. Try using a different number.
What you can do, and this is something you only want to set up temporarily, is create a folder. You know how you have the different drop downs for the menus that you can say home, or if you're on the road, different locations?
Yes.
Set up a different location and maybe put one or two of the Buffalo numbers in there. Try dialing in there to see if you can get in.
Okay.
Just to verify that, you know, it's probably the local number bank that you're trying to dial into that's having the issue.
Also be part of the problem where AOL was putting in incorrect numbers. They may have fixed that simply by blocking the numbers.
Yeah, there's six or seven phone numbers in Rochester for AOL.
Okay. My neighbor did get three new ones, but I don't know if they've tried it yet. So I'll have them try the screen.
I just did this with a client. They were saying, I've been on the phone for 3 hours with AOL, and they're saying it's my modem is broken and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
They were down in the 315. So I set up a folder called Rochester, and I put all the Rochester numbers in there. Boom, right off the first one, I was able to dial up and get in.
This
way she had proof that saying, I'm able to get into the Rochester numbers, but it's the 315 numbers that they were having problems with.
Right.
And wouldn't work.
Now, if you're hearing it ring and it never answers, it's not you, it's them. It's actually not them either. It's whoever they're buying their phones from in Rochester, which you have no way of knowing and no way of fixing.
Right. Okay, I'll give them the information.
Go for it.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Donna. Bye. Our next caller is Ron from Spencerport. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hi. I went out and upgraded my McAfee virus scan software a couple weeks ago. Went to the web, downloaded the software. After downloading it, I ended up with performance issues on all of my Windows activities. If I want to open a program, it takes forever. If I want to go out to Outlook Express and go to my email files, I can no longer switch from one person to another. It takes forever for Outlook to come up.
Ron, one thing, when you installed this McAfee, you installed it off the CD?
No, I did not. I downloaded it from the web.
All right. One thing you might want to check, and it definitely does take away from the performance, is McAfee, even on the download, will put in what they call safe and sound. And Safe and Sound is sitting there constantly backing up files and making things, you know, just in case your system crashes.
But it watches everything you do, records everything you do. Just in case there's a failure, you can back up to a previous state.
And if you've got a 2 gigahertz processor, you get acceptable performance with that. Otherwise, you certainly don't. So make sure that's turned off.
The other thing to check is what files it's scanning. If it's set to scan all files, every time you open a file, that's going to slow it down. You can change that, the automatic scan, to just program files, but leave your manual scan to all files. Because when you do a manual scan, you want to search every single file, even though it might take a few hours, but just to be safe.
Right. Got it?
And, not quite. I went ahead, and because of the performance issues, I uninstalled McAfee.
Yeah.
And after uninstalling it, called McAfee because things still weren't working right. Literally went through a manual process of uninstalling all kinds of files everywhere that McAfee hides. I still have the same issues.
If you go into your start, if you go into add remove programs, do you find Safe and Sound?
I can take a quick look.
Very, very quick, please.
Okay.
What are the other ones that McAfee throws in? Is it Clean Sweep? McAfee Firewall might still be there.
Yeah. But if they had him go in and literally clean out everything into other areas, you might just have other things that, you know, when you installed this, it corrupted other programs also.
Right.
And you also have to check in what's going on in that taskbar down in the lower right-hand corner. What I would suggest is if you run msconfig, the last tab on msconfig is the startup folder. Look what's being run in there. If you're running NewsNet or any of these other Coupon Saver, they can also take away from the performance of the machine. So you might want to uncheck a few of those things, write them down what you're unchecking, and reboot the machine and see if that helps your performance. Because so much garbage now gets loaded automatically when you install it into the startup, that it will slowly, you know, eat away at the performance of your machine. So I would suggest looking at msconfig, try unchecking a few things, and try that.
And see if you have any duplicates in that startup list, because then several programs are loading 2 instances and bogging things down as well.
Great.
Give it a shot, let us know.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Ron. Our next caller, we're going to stay in Spencerport, but now we're going to talk to Paul. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Ron's neighbor.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
The question I have for you is, when I log on to the Internet using just Internet Explorer, I'm dropping packets constantly. I can log on to AOL and it runs fine. But I can't figure out why I'm dropping all the packets when I want to just use Internet.
Are you dialing in?
No, DSL. I have Roadrunner.
Really?
What's telling you you're dropping packets?
Well, the pages don't load completely. Now, instead of getting the actual graphic to load in the several small boxes, I'll get just the blank box with a little X in it.
Right. Does this always happen? Sometimes get pictures?
Sometimes I get pictures.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll get a full page to load, sometimes a partial page to load.
It could be a couple of things. If you have AOL set up to be your primary method of getting to the Internet, it may be interfering in the background.
Have you, when you get onto AOL, are you dialing through the modem or you're going through the cable?
Cable.
So the browser inside of AOL through the cable still works?
Yes.
If you, that's really interesting.
Yeah, really.
Have you accidentally turned off pictures in IE externally?
No, you said you get some of them.
I'm getting some of them though. Not the whole page.
Well, sometimes there's settings for different kinds of pictures.
Yeah.
Oh. Even when
pictures, animations, Shockwave and Flash are handled separately.
Right.
Even when I load under Internet, if I load to the Roadrunner homepage. There's always like a graphic that's kind of moving and such in the center.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That will oftentimes not load.
An animated GIF might be turned off. But show animations in that checkbox.
Show animations has its own checkbox. I suggest you do is you go into Internet Explorer, go to the Tools menu, go to Internet Options, select the last tab on the right, and look down through all of those checkboxes and see if some of the choices for showing certain types of pictures are turned off.
One other thing. What version of Internet Explorer are you running?
6.
Did you go for the update, 6.2?
That's Netscape, isn't it?
No.
There's an IE 6.2 now?
6.02, yeah.
I went to the site and updated it, and it told me I had the most recent version.
All right. Just wanted to double check.
But I would check that first, because it sounds like things are deliberately turned off.
Looks like I've got everything checked. There's a few boxes that aren't checked.
Give them a try and let us know.
Okay.
Thanks. We have to take a break. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Yes, indeed, I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Rob Linton is on the buttons, and Ralph from Dundee is on the phone. Welcome, Ralph. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got, this is probably going to sound like a dumb question, but...
No question is dumb.
The only dumb question is the one you don't ask.
Yeah, right. Here's my dilemma. I frequently have guests over to the house, and they are capable of turning on my computer and getting on and going about doing whatever that they're interested in.
Right.
But what I did was about 4 months ago, I set up a password
and you
to log on to... to log on to Windows. And the screen comes up before it gets there, and you have to type the password in, and off you go. I'm running ME, incidentally. And so what's happened now, I just found out a couple of weeks ago, if you type in the wrong password, it doesn't allow you to get on there. So I know that everything is set up in that way correctly. However, once you hit the cancel button from that window, it logs right on.
How
do I prevent that?
You run a different operating system.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Windows ME, Windows 98, Windows 95 are all based on DOS and are really just pretty shells on top of DOS. They have no security and they have no real provisions for security. The password logon is a bogus bunch of nonsense.
Unless you're logging on to a server upstream.
Right.
But he's got, which every PC has, which a lot of folks don't realize, is that what I always thought you were referring to was what they call the boot-up password.
Or the BIOS password.
Correct. What you do is you can go into the BIOS.
Okay.
And in there, you can set up a boot-up password. In other words...
For God's sake, don't forget it.
Yes, you got to remember it, and it even asks you to type it in, because what happens now is it doesn't even start to boot to Windows. You first have to type in a password. You get 3 tries. Otherwise, it shuts down the computer.
Okay, that's what I'm looking to do.
You want to then set up a BIOS password. You can go into the BIOS system and you'll see set password. You can set an administrator password, and you could also set up user passwords. So if you want one for yourself and one for your wife, both of you are keeping them separate. This way, anybody trying to get into the system, they first get this little key or an X. When it first turns on, they have to type it in there, or otherwise they don't go any farther.
That's assuming the machine is off when you're guests. And what kind of guests? Just help themselves. These are not guests. These are vandals.
Freeloaders. You know, I mean, a lot of people out this way, they don't
have access. I want to check my mail.
I get some of that sometimes, and I get, hey, geez, have you seen this? Have you seen that? And, it's just one of those things where I'm not
Well, this
not
is
real
an easy way to do it.
But, if you do want to set up separate user accounts that require passwords, then you have to run 2000 XP, something like that.
Right.
Okie doke.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Good luck, Ralph, and lock your doors.
Have a good afternoon.
Thanks. You too. Our next caller is Nils from Rochester. Welcome, Nils.
Thank you, gentlemen. I have, at work, I use...
you couldn't get me at market today, so you had to call in?
I couldn't get you at the market, so I had to use the phone.
Uh-oh.
At work, I've got Outlook, regular full-blown Outlook for email program. On a PC. At home, normally use Macintosh, normally use Netscape. But I was wondering if I saw Outlook Express appeared to have similar features to Outlook in terms of being able to do groups and things, and I was wondering if there was a way I could bring my personal address book from work home and put it in Outlook Express.
Well, that's possible, but Outlook and Outlook Express, the only similarities they have are for email.
Yeah.
Outlook does calendaring, scheduling, and a lot of other things on your corporate server.
I don't need any of that at home. It would just be really convenient to have, be able to send some grouped emails and things like that that I've got and have access to my personal address book from work at home.
In Outlook, do an export, and in Netscape, do an import.
Oh. Okay.
And there's also, you can basically import into pretty much any email program. If you want to go directly from Outlook to Outlook Express, there's a couple of tricks on the Outlook page, which is macemail.com.
Mac.
Which basically is for any email program on the Mac, and they have an Outlook section on tips for Outlook Express and how to link and copy information from your Outlook full Outlook directly.
Okay.
And that link will be up on our website very shortly.
You could also run Outlook on the Mac to get the calendaring functions as well. Personal calendaring, unless your Mac can tie into your corporate Exchange server to get your corporate calendar.
It goes in through a secure intranet page.
Yeah, then probably not, unless they open it up for you, and that's really unlikely. But that should set you up, Nils.
Okay, thank you very much, gentlemen.
See you at the market next week.
Yep.
And we'll see the rest of you on the other side of this break. I'm Nick Francesco. You're watching, no, you're not watching anything. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Yes, it is Soundbites, and I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Rob Linton is on the buttons, and Gene from Dansville is on the phone. Welcome, Gene. What's your question?
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. What's up?
Virus problem.
Uh-oh.
friend's computer.
Yeah.
Here we go again. Friend of a friend. Go ahead.
I run Norton's antivirus on it, and it come up with an SIRC32 worm.
Sircam!
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
That's making the rounds again. Go ahead.
And naturally, it won't let Windows start anymore.
Well, were you running Norton antivirus continually in the background, or do you usually keep it turned off and then this was a scan?
It was running McAfee originally,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's where the virus come through on. Then when I installed Norton's, that's when it found the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I say, when I tried to start up Windows again, then it comes up and says, file not found.
Which file?
SIRC32 file.
Yeah, right. Okay. Because what you have to do is...
You've improperly deleted it, and so Windows is looking for it.
No, what it is it's in the registry. And there's a whole procedure with... If you go to either McAfee or Norton, they will. There's a whole write-up on the procedure that you have to do to go into the registry to get rid of it.
Okay.
And Symantec also has a CIRCAM removal tool that does it all for you.
Right. Because it literally goes in there and it's sitting there trying to find a file. And it's down in the user, and what it does is add a particular line that it's got to go in there and modify. Like Steve said, if you get the utility, that's a safer way if you're not comfortable editing the registry.
There you go.
Now, and then it also come up later with a... It says the Happy 99 worm.
Oh, yeah. Your machine is probably loaded. Even though you had McAfee on there, if you're not doing the updates, a lot of folks say, why go up there and get the updates? I go over.
Or if you're not running it, because you can have it on the machine and not actually be scanning for downloaded files or whatever. There are multiple things you can look for, and if you're turned off scan downloads.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of folks sit there and say, well, I click on the update button, but they don't actually verify it and come to find out that their
connection didn't go through or whatever.
Well, no, that their terms have since expired and they got to renew their updates because Norton requires you to pay a fee to get the updates every year.
Every year. It's only like $12 or $15, but
right.
You have to do it every year.
Right
because on my system at home, I do have the live updates on Norton's.
Right.
And that comes through automatically when I connect to the Internet.
Yeah, it sounds like you need definitely to update the antivirus and run it, but the first thing you need to do is download this tool, which will get you back in and up and running.
The problem is I can't connect to the Internet now.
You're going to have to do that on somebody else's machine.
You have to do it from another one.
Right, and download it to whatever, a disk or whatever, and do it
okay.
from there. Okey-doke?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Our next caller, it's Nick. Nick, welcome. Nick from Rochester.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi there.
Two questions on this wonderful operating system called XP.
Oh, yeah.
Don't like it, but using it. One is, I have a machine that's on a network in my home. I have three computers on it. Works like a charm, generally until I try to go on the internet on the XP machine and the other machines are off. It will not go on until and unless I turn on the other machines.
How are you connecting to the internet?
Through a router, Roadrunner.
A hardware router or running on one of the other computers?
Linksys.
A Linksys router.
Yeah.
And it won't... Huh?
Yeah, because XP finds it, no problem.
Is this a Linksys router or a Linksys hub?
Router.
And it gets an IP address from the router?
Well, that's the other part of our problem. The only way I can get it to go on the internet at all is to go in and manually tell it to use a 192 number. When you tell it to go get an automatic number, it chooses a 162 number wherever it gets it.
169, maybe?
169.
Yeah, that's a generic number, meaning it couldn't find this DHCP server.
That's it.
It's possible that you've accidentally excluded the XP machine in the Linksys setup.
You might want to just hit the reset button on the Linksys that will totally, if by chance any numbers have gotten in there, accidentally in the setup program.
Yeah, you've got to hold it down for like 7 or 8 seconds.
And that will set it back to factory settings.
Well, I will try that. I haven't really...
And one of the options you can use with these routers is to restrict who can access the internet. And it may be that accidentally that one machine has been added to the restriction list.
Right. Well, the other thing it may be that you have, you need to update your network card driver.
Oh.
It is possible that you have a bad one or a damaged one or just the wrong one. If, depending on what card you have, if it's not one of the more common cards, it is possible that the manufacturer has an updated driver and that the original one didn't work really well.
Okay, well,
so give that a try.
Those are wonderful suggestions.
Thank you.
The last question I have is another XP machine, unfortunately, that will come up to the flag, the XP, that little flag on a black screen, gets to that point and dies.
Was it running previously?
It was running wonderfully previously. And then we did our thing with Norton Utilities.
Okay, here's what you can do. When you're starting up the XP machine, what you can do is hold down the F8 key.
Okay.
And that will present you with a menu. One of the options there is last known good boot up.
Okay.
And you can select that. What it'll do is it'll go back to the history, because XP keeps a history of, like ME did, of last known good boot ups.
Oh.
So you can select the last known good boot up and try going from there.
Now, what may happen is that you will find that you want to take a close look throughout your system, because you may find that some program is no longer installed according to the registry, and that's what happened was whatever that last thing was you did screwed things up. So check that out. Okie doke?
I will be happy to. Thanks for all the help, gentlemen.
Thanks, Nick. Our next caller is Paul from North Chilai. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Hi. I'm having a problem saving JPEG files. Whenever I go to them now and I click on something to save, so
nothing happens.
Save picture as, and it just gives me a file name untitled save as type bitmap.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't go to... When I click on the save as type, it just has bitmap in there.
Right.
So I don't know.
First thing you want to try is to go into open up your browser, go into Tools, go into Internet Options,
and
clear your cache.
Internet Options, clear my cache.
Right, because what may have happened is a lot of websites nowadays try to prevent you from downloading pictures because they are proprietary and they are copyrighted.
Mm-hmm.
And so they throw a little JavaScript on your machine that prevents you from downloading them as JPEGs or from downloading them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And clearing out your cache will remove that little JavaScript and allow you to do what you want with your own machine.
Okay, now where did you say it was?
I said it was under Internet Tools, Internet Options.
Yep.
Right on the very first page, you will see, depending on what version you have, what it's called, but it's temporary Internet files. And there's a delete files button right in the middle of that.
Yeah, it says delete cookies, delete files.
There you go, delete files.
Oh, okay.
That's the one you want. Give it a try.
All right, great.
Okie doke.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, and Mina Francesco on Soundbites. Only and always on 1180 WHAM. Yes, it's true. We don't know Jack. I'm Nick Francesco.
I know I'm Dave Enright.
And I think I'm Steve Ray.
And we're pretty sure that's reticent Rob Linton on the buttons.
My
the mystery
way.
Man. We don't know what he looks like. We don't know what he sounds like. But he's on the buttons. And on the cell phone is Mark, pulled over to the side of the road and quietly waiting for
you
us to speak to
you. You got it.
Yeah,
over
right.
On the side of the road.
There you go.
Thanks for taking my call,
sure.
Guys. I've got a PowerBook G4. And I'm having difficulty syncing my handspring visor edge in either direction between the two informations. I'm operating on Mac OS X, and I just can't, it just won't sync any information going either direction. Do you have a solution for me on something like this?
Which Palm software are you running?
Good question.
One of the problems that came out is that Palm released a version of their Palm desktop for OS X, but it doesn't work with handsprings. It only works with Palms.
Oh, nice!
Yeah.
And if you're trying to run Palm desktop under OS 9, in the classic mode of OS X,
right.
Some classic programs cannot access hardware like USB.
Okay.
You may have to reboot into OS 9 directly. Or try downloading the OS X version of Palm Desktop and hope that they've added the handspring support by now.
I don't think that they have. I did try doing that, and maybe therein lies my problem. And maybe that's they just have to wait for Palm to catch up to Mac OS X operating system.
Right, and check the handspring website to see if they release any add-ins for the Palm Desktop to allow the handsprings to work.
They described it as being in a a particular type of an mode, but not it's in some type of a testing mode apparently, but
probably beta testing.
Beta.
They actually have a news item on how can I use my handspring with Mac OS X. The new version 4.0 is not yet available in the Mac OS X format. But
okay.
2.6.1 is compatible with the classic environment. Don't
right.
use the new release from Palm, it says. And so you can download 2.6.1 from their website until they release the new version of the software.
Okay.
Got it?
Yeah. Any idea on when that could be? Or?
Well, they're saying not yet, and they're working on it just as hard as their little busy
before Christmas.
Can do it.
Before Christmas of 2002?
Well, no, just before Christmas.
Right, right. No, I was I was joking. Thanks so much.
There you go.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Brian from Geneva. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
Oh, hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I don't have a problem, but I do have a question.
Okay.
I'd like to know what kind of hardware, what kind of software, and what kind of media I should be looking at. What I want to do is burn some CDs off of my old LP collection. So I want to burn audio CDs that I can play on any compact disc.
Do you have any equipment now?
Oh yeah, I got a Pentium 2 class machine, but no CD burner.
Most CD burners come with Raxio's Easy CD Creator Lite, which can record onto an audio disc, but you need to have audio recording software. CD Creator Deluxe comes with a program called Spin Doctor, which will record from any input source. So basically what you need is a sound card in your PC and then a patch cord to go from your stereo to your PC, and you play the record on the stereo and record the song on your computer with CD Spin Doctor, and then use the CD Creator software to burn that recording onto a disc.
Okay, so I need Spin Doctor and CD Creator.
CD Creator Deluxe, which comes with Spin Doctor. When you're looking to buy a CD recorder, see if you can find one that comes with Deluxe, or if it just comes with the light version, there's an upgrade to Deluxe for, I think, another $30, $40. There's also a lot of freeware and shareware audio recording software. In fact, even the Windows Sound Recorder will record from any input. But since you need to get the burning software anyway, you might as well get the package that comes together with it.
Excellent.
There you go.
Sure. Thank you much.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Tom from Rochester. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
My question is, I'm working with Microsoft Word 2000, and I'd like to type in Latvian. I've gone through the control panel and set up the Latvian language, and I also went through Microsoft Word and put in the international feed. The problem now is that it does type in Latvian, but the difficulty is that the keyboard's all rearranged so that none of the letters, none of the English letters, maintain themselves. Back in Windows 95, I was able to use the English keyboard and install individual keys to get the special characters. Any idea whether that can be done in either Word or Windows?
What version of Windows are you using?
98.
Yeah. They've got this whole locale thing going now where it sets the locale up for you. It sets the language, the keyboard, the everything together. You should be able to go back into the keyboard and set it up specifically for U.S. English, but you have to do it separately. That's a control panel module. So if you go into control panel, you can go to keyboard and change the language.
Right. I've done that. If I change it to U.S. English, and I can do that, how can I adjust the individual keys? For example, to type special keys, I used to be able to use, like, control and then press an A or a Z and get the special characters by just programming them in through the symbol tables.
Yes. You can't. I don't know that you can do that part anymore, but you can certainly programming them in by holding down the control key the alt key and typing the four-digit number that represents that character on the keypad.
Ah, okay.
So you need to get a list of those, which you should fairly easily be able to get from,
I'd have to do that each time, though, that I came to one of those characters?
Yes, unless you buy one of those keyboard reprogrammer programs.
Okay, well,
that was clumsy, but you knew what I meant.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
There you go.
All right, many thanks.
Thank you very much. Our next caller, Pat from Irondequoit. Welcome, Pat. What's your question?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I can hardly hear you.
Okay, I'll speak up.
Okay, this is really silly, and it's not as dumb, but when I right-click on my desktop and I go to New, 17 different things show, and I want to get rid of some of them. How do I do that? You know, like when you want to make a new document, you right-click on your Windows 98.
Oh, yeah.
Right-click on the desktop and go down to New.
Right.
And I've got 17 different things showing, and I just want about four in there. How do I get rid of all the rest? I mean, I don't want a jewel case to pop up there and stuff like that.
If you go to one of them, now you're using Windows 98?
Correct.
I don't know if this works in 98. What you might want to try first is right-click on it and then select, if you get a little drop-down menu, select Delete.
Well, all that does is, I tried that, it makes a copy of the thing. It makes a new whatever I right-clicked on the desktop.
Then you want to go into Documents and Settings.
Under Settings?
No, there should be a folder on your desktop called Documents and Settings.
There isn't.
Anywhere on your system?
Might have deleted it.
But you can't. It should be...
My Documents, mean?
No, there should be a Settings folder in your Windows folder. Pat, we are so out of time, it's unbelievable. I apologize. But you should be able to find a folder on your desktop called New. Not on your desktop, but somewhere on your system called New. And in it are those things, and you should be able
to delete
them.
Look in the control panel.
We are as done as it's possible to get. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons. If you missed us here, you can catch us next Friday on Our News if you have Time Warner Cable. Or we'll be back here next Saturday at 1220 and 1180 WHAM. I'm Nick Francesco, and we are Soundbites.